It's time!
You guys silly? I'm still gonna send it.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Half Athlete Radio on Loot Air Student Radio. My name is Christian Bond. I am POU's half athlete. I don't play sports anymore, but I write about them. I cover them. I do all I can with sports. Joining me in studio, he's the only athlete left on staff here at Half Athlete Radio. He's a tight end for the POU football program. His name is DJ Winter. DJ, how are you doing today?
I'm doing pretty good, pretty good. Pretty good football weekend for the Pacific Northwest, more so Washington. I want to say the quote of the weekend was UPS with a big upset of FedEx. I saw it on Twitter and just thought I would mention that because they won this weekend. So I thought that was pretty funny.
What happened? I'm confused.
So there was a tweet
right
sent out about how good Washington football did this weekend.
Right.
And UPS, in fact, won this weekend,
okay,
which is
Puget Sound. Right?
Puget Sound, yes. And someone had the joke that, UPS with the big upset of FedEx. I'm assuming they weren't a football fan, but I thought it was pretty funny.
Okay.
I guess you had to be there. Yeah, bad joke. Bad joke. My fault.
I was just confused. I didn't know if it was companies having like beef over Twitter or someone. I don't know. That could be as much on me as it is on you. Joining me in studio, he's our new co-host. He's here with DJ and I. His name is Seth Bershing. Seth, how you doing? What's going on, man?
I'm doing all right, Christian. Just hanging in there with classes and everything. But you still consider me new, though, huh?
Well, yeah. I don't know how many of our listeners are first-time listeners or listening all the time. So, you know, Seth is relatively new. We'll see. It might take a semester. It might take next week. Maybe next week I'll quit calling you new. I don't know. Haven't decided yet.
We'll get there.
Guys, I had a bad weekend, and I want to tell you about my bad weekend. It started on Saturday. I was at both the POU soccer games, controlling the scoreboard like I have all year long. It was a heated game, the second game of a doubleheader. POU was facing crosstown rival Puget Sound in the Battle of the South Sound.
Mm-hmm.
There was a play where POU needed to make a substitution. It was their throw-in, so I buzzed the horn. And the substitution was not made. At that time, the Puget Sound head coach turned around and tore into me. Just let me have it because I didn't get the substitution in because I was doing a terrible job. Do you think it's my job to get a sub in, Seth?
Well, I've never done scoring for a soccer game before, so I don't even know what your responsibilities for that would be, but
I think it's the official's job to control the game, not the dude running the scoreboard. Y'all got to realize the scoreboard is a luxury across all sports.
Oh, geez.
It doesn't need to be there.
Well, I mean, at the collegiate level, it's pretty important.
For what? What's official about a scoreboard?
You got to know what the score is.
For who?
The teams.
You guys would know what the score is,
yeah,
if there was no scoreboard. So who's the score for? Who's the scoreboard for? It's a luxury.
I don't know. Some guys are. I've been on teams where some guys are tuned out to where they don't even know what the score is.
Well, soccer games are so low scoring, though. You should always know what the score is. It's probably 0-0.
Yeah, that's true.
It was 0-0 at that time. That's a good call.
Hey, it varies sport to sport.
So, no, scoreboard's a luxury across all sports. Like, if there was no scoreboard, DJ, your football team would know what the score was.
Yeah, but
so who's it for? It's for the fans, and it doesn't need to be because they don't need to know, really.
Yeah. I mean, your strategy involves the scoreboard too. How much time is left? That okay?
But you
okay,
would
that
know,
could,
though. You would know even if there wasn't a scoreboard.
Those how much time is left?
Yes, you would figure it out. The referee has it. Yes.
No.
Oh, it would
be a lot harder, definitely.
Hey, call us 253-535-7332. Tell us if the scoreboard is a luxury or if the scoreboard is absolutely needed. Anyway, the moral of the story is: on Saturday, I got yelled at from the Puget Sound coach about how terrible I was doing.
Well, Puget Sound can, you know what.
And they were doing that. So, anyway, we'll talk about it later, but POU went on to win in double overtime with about 2 minutes left. Bennett Bugbee drilled home a goal to secure the victory. And POU is 4-0 in the Battle of the South Sound this year. So if you're from Puget Sound, call us and we'll hang up on you. So,
wow.
And then on Sunday, on Sunday for a class, I had to go try to complete a high ropes course.
Oh.
And when you are built like I am, you kind of know your role and you know that you need to stay on the ground.
Which is rock solid. Rock solid.
You know you need to, you're a ground squirrel. You need to stay on the ground, right? I did as much as get to the top of the telephone pole of which I had to climb, and I stood there for an hour because I was so scared I couldn't move. And I don't know.
You're afraid of heights?
It's situational, though. Like, in that case, climbing up a telephone pole, standing on a like, can't do it. Found that out this weekend. Can't do it.
So don't go up to the Space Needle either.
I could do the Space Needle. That's a structure.
They just redid the floors, though. Like, the floors are straight glass now.
Oh, I don't know. I would find out if I got up there. Like, structure, like, if it's a structure, I'm fine. If it's a roller coaster, like, that's not that big a deal. But climbing up and being, I was harnessed in, and I saw other classmates, like, dangling from a pole. I still couldn't make myself do it. So I had a tough weekend, that is. But we're here now, so let's get this radio show on the road. If you like what you are hearing and you want to hear it again, you can do it at massmedia.pou.edu. Check out all the shows in podcast form over there. If you don't want to listen to the full show, but you want to catch a clip or a portion of the show, you can do it at Half Athlete Radio on YouTube. That's Half Athlete Radio. I already mentioned the phone number, but please call us 253-535-7332. That's how you can talk to us. Once again, it's 253-535-7332. Let's jump into some POU sports. Over the weekend, DJ, your football team traveled down to Pacific, and your offense was tremendous. It had 445 yards,
mm-hmm.
But it was a losing effort. You guys fell 24-22 Pacific. The final three drives for POU with a chance to go down and score and win the game. POU throws an interception, and they turn over the ball on downs. DJ, you got to explain what went on, because this is a game you guys shouldn't have lost.
No, it's not. And we fell in. We always talk about the 60%, 60% of the games you're going to beat yourselves, and this is what that fell into. We had six trips into the red zone. We only scored on three of them. Like you said, our final three drives had a pick, and then a turnover on downs. Those three drives inside the red zone also ended on turnover on downs. One actually with a missed field goal, I believe. But, you know, those are points on the board, and that's 21 points we left out there in the red zone, which is not good. That's a 50% rate that you're scoring. In my opinion, if you realize that, you know, you're not scoring touchdowns, I know our field goal squad was a little, you know, shaky on Saturday, but I still believe we have to give our kicker a shot in kicking those field goals, because even with those three trips, if we make all three of those, that's 9 points. If we make two of them, that's 6 points. We only lost by four. That's the difference in the game, and that is a win. But, you know, we've lost two games now in which we have been close to scoring, and we've been right there. Kalu was from the 6. Pacific was from the 10, and a total of 10 points combined is what we've lost. So, you know, it was really frustrating. We just got to fix mental mistakes, and we got a big one this weekend. Homecoming, 1 o'clock p.m. at Sparks Stadium against Whitworth, who is coming off of two losses, disappointing ones. But if we can fix our mental mistakes going forward, that will be a big key into how our season will play out.
I get frustrated with hearing about how the football team is, you know, no matter what the year is, I guess, 3 plays and 5 yards or whatever it is away from being, you know, 3-0 or 2-1 or whatever it gets to. And I know that you're probably the same way, DJ. So
yeah, there's a trend, as you can see. That's all I'm going to say. Yeah. I'm not going to say anything else.
I feel, Seth, you got thoughts on the POU football game, just looking at these numbers and kind of seeing it's one that they probably should have won. So
not only is it the points left up on the board when you have those drives that get to the red zone and then you miss a field goal or you turn it over, but it's just got to be a momentum killer, right, DJ? I mean, to be driving the ball, you're feeling good, and then all of a sudden, bam, now you're on defense instead.
And momentum is such a big part of football. We also talk about, you know, Big Mo, and you lose Big Mo when you get all the way down there. You either, A, can't finish a drive, or you can't get points on the board in a field goal. So, you know, It is what it is.
Yeah, you homecoming this weekend. You said game at 1 p.m. at Sparks. Who do you have again?
Whitworth.
That should be a good one. It's going to be a tough test for you guys. But you guys got a little bit to fix and head in there and play a good game.
A must win if we want to stay in the playoff picture.
I would agree with that, yes. Let's bounce over to POU women's soccer. They played two games at home this past week. They scored and scored often against George Fox. POU women beat George Fox 5-0 on Saturday. And then on Sunday, they squeaked past Lewis and Clark 1-0. So pretty solid weekend for the women's soccer team. You guys have takeaways from that?
I would like to point out, again, the stat that I pointed to last week, in that they have only allowed 2 goals in this entire season, so 12 games, and they've allowed a grand total of 2 goals.
Not that bad.
Yeah. And on Saturday, Michaela Grady had 2 goals, along with Leah McGee, who also had 2 goals. So you got 4 goals with that duo. And we outshot the Bruins 15-8 for shots on goal, so we were able to capitalize on our opportunities and then finish most of them. With the Lewis and Clark game, soccer is a weird sport, in my opinion. You can do really well one game, and then you come back and play a team that you know that's not very good, and they can kind of hang around. And I think that's where soccer is, in quote unquote, weird, in my opinion. Maybe that's not the best choice of words, but
and
you
if
know,
you want a testament to that, DJ, just look at the U.S. men's national team.
Yeah, exactly.
There's it.
I feel like, you know, soccer, there's not one team that dominates. Like, any team can beat anybody on any given day, and that's kind of what we saw. Even though that Lewis and Clark didn't pull it out, we squeaked one goal out by Liz Griffith. And Lewis and Clark was only 2-7 coming into this. But you know what? POU got the win, and that's all that matters.
Let's move on to volleyball. Volleyball played a kind of a different schedule this week. They had Puget Sound during the week. They swept them 3-0 over at Puget Sound. And then George Fox was in town Friday night for a volleyball game, and they got swept 3-0. So volleyball's rolling right now. A lot of fall sports doing really well.
POU actually goes over to Whitworth this weekend, battle of the first place teams. And, you know, both of these were won pretty handily. POU beat UPS 25-13 in the first set, 26-24 in the second, and 25-16 in the third. So, you know, those first and third sets, you know, we really didn't have any competition, and more of the same in the George Fox. Shout out to Danielle Skiebel, Northwest Conference Offensive Player of the Week. She had 18 kills total, which is an average of 3%, and 11 blocks. So,
against
you
George
know,
Fox,
so yeah,
yeah,
shouts out to her.
Yep, and then we'll wrap things up here in the opening segment. Let's talk men's soccer. They played one game this mm-hmm. weekend. It was a double overtime thriller against Puget Sound. 1-0 was the score. Bennett Bugbee fired home the game winner late in double overtime. And you guys already know how I feel about that one. That made me pretty happy. So,
Seth?
Well, I believe that's their second double overtime win in a row. I mean, the wins are great, but I'd appreciate it if they could do that before the overtimes. But...
yeah,
ultimately, the end result is good, so I can't complain.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Yeah, and then RJ Noel was the Northwest Conference Defender of the Week with 5 critical saves. You know, pretty even game throughout from what I read in Christian's great post-game recap.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we were finally able to break through in the second overtime with a goal by Bennett.
Yeah, and like I mentioned before, POU is 4-0 so far in the Battle of the South Sound, with men's soccer, women's soccer, volleyball, and football all beating Puget Sound this year. So let's take a short break right now. We're going to jump over. We're going to talk a little Mariners baseball. We know it's the off season, but it's time to retool a pretty average team. We'll talk about a couple of positions that Jerry DePoto and Scott Service have said need some improvement. We might make some suggestions as to what they could do in those spots. So don't go anywhere. This is Half Athlete Radio on Loot Air Student Radio.
I heard about a shooting involving a 3-year-old girl over the summer. My daughter Riley is that age.
There was a point when I felt that I was going to die.
My parents used to always say a bullet doesn't have a name on it.
Someone put a bullet in the back of my 14-year-old son's head.
The gun should never be an option.
We're Americans. We don't have to live like this.
We can all make a difference.
In the United States, 88 people die of gun violence every day.
We can end gun violence.
Welcome back to Half Athlete Radio on Loot Air Student Radio. My name is Christian Bond. I am POU's half athlete, joined in studio by a tight end for the POU football program. His name is DJ Winter, also joined by our new co-host. His name is Seth Bershing. If you enjoyed this episode or like want to go back and listen to any of the old episodes that we've done, you can do it at massmedia.pou.edu. Check out our stuff there in full form. If you don't want to listen to all of the show, but you want to catch a clip, you can do it at YouTube. Type in Half Athlete Radio in the search bar and check us out there. Go ahead and subscribe to the page. The more subscribers we get, the better our grades are. So help us out over there on YouTube. If you want to call us and give some suggestions about how the Mariners can make their roster better, you can do that right now.
If you're still interested in the Mariners.
That is a good point. Or if you just want to talk about something else, if you want us to stop talking about the Mariners, call us, 253-535-7332. Once again, it's 253-535-7332. All right, guys, let's jump into it. About a week ago, Jerry DePoto and Scott Servais addressed the media in what was kind of a farewell to the 2017 season and a hello to the 2018 offseason. During that conference, they talked about two positions specifically that they were going to address, and those two spots were first base and center field. We look at the first base numbers, the production the Mariners got out of first base this year. There were 604 at-bats, 193 hits for an average of 230. So kind of some struggles there from Valencia and Alonso. Those two guys were the two that made up the platoon over there at first base. Danny Valencia hit 247. He slugged 388 for an on-base plus slugging of 689. And Yonder Alonso, he hit 268. Slugged 449 for an on-base plus slugging of 789. Go ahead and talk about it, guys. Who is a possible fit? Who do you want to see either take over at first base for the Mariners or stay at first base for the Mariners? Just let me know what you guys are thinking about that spot right now.
Seth, you want to take it away?
Well, looking at the free agency class, it doesn't look all that strong at first base. Alonso is actually the top name that I'm seeing here for first base free agents. I thought Alonso was all right. So I do think if they're going to try and get somebody else at first, it's going to have to be via trade, or else it's just going to be another lateral move where they're not really getting any better and they're just kind of staying below average at first base.
Seth, you mentioned this, that first base is traditionally a high, you know, high offensive output position for a lot of major league teams. Personally, I don't think that will be the case for the Seahawks. For the Mariners, because you got Cruz, you got Cano. I believe they can still provide some pop in that lineup. So I think, you know, Safeco being a traditional pitcher-friendly park, you're not going to see a lot of home runs. So I think, you know, we're going to have to go with the best case, which is Alonso. Eric Hosmer is on the market, but that's going to, you know, that's going to cost you a lot of money. And most of our money is already going to Felix, Cruz, and Cano. Over the past three seasons, Alonso, you know, has had a decent average. 2015 with the Padres, he batted .282. 2016 with Oakland, he batted .253. And in 2017, combined with the Mariners and Oakland, he batted .266. So, you know, all decent numbers, all above .250. And then he saw the power surge come this year with the 22 home runs. But, you know, he's a low-cost guy that I believe can provide a lot of base hits, a lot of doubles here and there. And I think we'll see his RBI count rise from, you know, those 50s up maybe up into, like, the 70s or something like that. So in my opinion, Alonso is a guy in the outfield. You already have Heredia coming back, Gamel. There's one other, Haniger. And then you can have Cruz kind of drop in either to left field or right field when needed. And, you know, you can have maybe sign a low-cost free agent in the outfield that can drop in as well. But in my opinion, it's going to be first base for the Mariners.
You guys mentioned, you know, low cost. As well, Seth, you said lateral moves. One of the free agents on the market this year is Logan Morrison. Like, literally the very first guy. No. The very first guy Jerry DePoto traded away. I do not like Logan Morrison, but he had a heck of a year down at Tampa Bay. He batted .246. He slugged .516, OPS of .868. He hit 38 home runs.
Mm-hmm. In a hitter's park.
Nelson Cruz hit 39.
Mm-hmm. Because Nelson Cruz is a good hitter, Christian.
Was it Logan Morrison's a good hitter then?
I can't trust the consistency with Logan Morrison. Like you said, when he was here, he showed spurts of power. But I don't think he's a consistent enough player to you know, provide that pop throughout the year.
Yeah, what he just did. He just hit 38 home runs.
Yeah, that's one year, though.
He was always so streaky with the Mariners. He'd have a great week, and then he'd slump for the rest of the month.
Well, it was probably very streaky as well in Tampa Bay, but it was probably 2 weeks of good and one of bad.
Mm-hmm. Are we all in agreement, though, that first base is the position to go for the Mariners?
To pay the most attention to?
Yes.
Yes.
Are you?
Yes.
You sound a little hesitant.
I'm hesitant, but like the gimme is starting pitching, but both DePoto and Service have also claimed that, you know, there's nothing on the market anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So they're kind of got what they got.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever that means, I have no idea.
You said you like Logan Morrison. His home run.
I don't like Logan Morrison.
Oh, you don't?
But it's weird to look at his numbers and see that he's got 38 home runs on this season. Like, that's incredible.
The 3 years prior, in 2014, 15, and 16, he had 11, 17, and 14 home runs. And one of those seasons, 14, was with Tampa Bay. So, you know, like I said, I just don't trust his consistency.
That's a fair point. That's a fair point. Other low-cost, first-based free agents. Lucas Duda hit .217, but he hit 30 home runs and drew 60 walks. I don't know.
Yeah, doesn't really fit DePoto's style. He likes guys who can hit for average.
Yeah, I'm kind of in agreement right there.
Well, not only average, but he wants guys to draw walks. And if I type this in right, I would almost go back and double check. Logan Morrison, along with those 38 home runs, drew 81 walks.
Okay.
That fits the mold perfectly for what the Mariners need at first base.
Yeah.
You talk about lateral moves, like, come on. What?
You know, I wouldn't be disappointed if we signed Lomo, but I just feel like there are better options out there than him. Like Alonzo,
okay, another option,
example.
Another low cost, Mitch Moreland, batted .246, just like Logan Morrison did.
I like Mitch Moreland more than I like Logan Morrison.
He had a .443 slugging and a .769 on base plus slugging
in a down year too for him.
Hit 21 home runs, 57 walks as a member of the Boston Red Sox, I believe.
Yes.
A Hooters Pork over there in Boston.
It is.
Those are bad numbers for a first baseman over at Fenway Park.
Well, yeah, but he also had a down year. Like, you look at his years in Texas, another hitters-friendly park, and he killed the Mariners year in and year out.
Did he really? Now we're going to play this game.
Oh, boy.
Here comes baseball reference.
Oh, boy.
Seth, do you remember him doing that?
I do seem to remember him doing well against the Mariners. I didn't really watch him beyond that, so I wouldn't really know.
Hold up. I'm looking up.
I am too.
I don't know.
As a Texas Ranger, it's a down year for him. 2016, 22 home runs. 2015, 23 home runs. Yeah, that's about what he does. 22 home runs a year. He doesn't hit any better than .246. Oh, he had an up year in 2015. .278 for Mitch Moreland. That's a really high year for him. Everywhere else is about .250.
About the same, too, in walks.
Yeah,
and
career .252.
He did draw more walks this year, 57 compared to his 2015 and 2016 years with only 112 and 118. So
yeah, I think Eric Hosmer, you mentioned the high-cost guy, he's probably out of the question for the Mariners.
Yeah.
He did bat .318.
I mean,
25 homers and 66 walks.
Yeah,
I mean,
Hosmer,
pretty solid,
you have an ideal situation for everything, and Hosmer is that fit. But like I said, the Mariners, traditionally, you know, a low-income, well, a smaller market team, too. I just don't see him coming here.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, if you sign Hosmer, you pretty much wave a flag that says, hey, we're going to win games 12-9 because we just wasted, or not wasted necessarily, but
what do you think? What do you think the chances are that we sign Hosmer?
Not very high.
Yeah.
Yeah, just kinda, you got money.
You got money put at other places. I mean, you mentioned Cano, Cruz, Seager. They also just signed Segura to 5 years. They got Felix Hernandez, who has a hefty backloaded contract. I mean, they're kind of stuck with one of these mid-level guys, low-cost guys, and, you know, if they go out and get someone, it's not getting significantly better.
Yeah.
You said, hold on, okay. No, you got problems with the consistency of Logan Morrison. Yonder Alonso is your option, right? The guy you'd go with?
Heck yeah.
2015, 5 home runs. 2016, 7 home runs. Yeah, 2017, 22 home runs. Come on, that's the same exact thing as Logan Morrison.
He had power issues. Like I said, he had a power surge, but he hit good for average. Lomo, let's check out Lomo's average. That's,
oh, here we go. Let's look at Logan Morrison over the years. And
guarantee
then
his average is not as good as what Alonso has been throughout the years.
And the other thing that you have to remember, Christian, is every player who leaves the Mariners tends to improve. It's been that way for almost 2 decades now, for whatever reason, but I should compose a list for next week's show.
Here we go. Lomo batted .238 in 2016.
Okay.
.225 in 2015.
Okay.
All right. .262 when the Mariners had their, you know, close to playoff run. He batted .262.
Okay.
Which is his career high.
Okay.
.242 in 2013. .230 in 2012. So, like I said, Alonso is, he hits for a better average. He may not walk as much as DePoto would like, but he hits better for average.
It is a topic worth discussing, trying to figure out how the Mariners are going to get better, because they need to. So
yeah.
Well, let's cool it for the Mariners. We can come back to it next week and talk a little bit more about some things they can do in the outfield. But for right now, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll talk about the Seattle Seahawks. They beat the Rams on Sunday, or did they?
Yes. Yes, they did.
Did the Rams beat themselves? We'll talk about it when we come back. Don't go anywhere. It's Half Athlete Radio on Loot Air Student Radio.
My hair is kind of different.
Not everyone likes the way I dress. And I don't look like other people.
Me neither. Everyone is different, but no one deserves to be bullied. So be kind, stay positive, and support each other.
Every single day.
Together we can change the game.
Welcome back to Half Athlete Radio on Loot Air Student Radio. My name is Christian Bond. I am POU's Half Athlete, joined in studio by a member of the POU football program. He's a tight end. His
number
name
87
is DJ Winter. Also, our new co-host, he's a half athlete like myself. His name is Seth Bershing. If you want to listen to the show in full podcast form, you can do it over at mastmedia.pou.edu. Check us out there. If you don't want to listen to all of it, but you want to catch another part, we can go back and talk about go back and listen to the Mariners' problems at first base. You can do it on YouTube, Half Athlete Radio, in the search bar on YouTube. Go ahead and subscribe to that page. Like I said, the more subscribers we get, the better our grades are, so help us out. Hook us up. If you want to talk about the Seahawks game that happened on Sunday, call us, 253-535-7332. Once again, it's 253-535-7332. The question I would love to hear our listeners answer would be, who beat who? Did the Seahawks beat the Rams, or did the Rams beat the Rams? Because this was a game that was just a one-score game. The Seahawks beat the Rams 16-10, but the Rams turned the ball over 5 times. Mm-hmm. DJ, what do you make of it? You're our football guy. Like, tell me about it. Who beat who?
Well, I think you can make a case for both sides here.
Right, so pick one.
Okay, that's fair. I'm going to argue this: the Seahawks beat the Rams.
Okay, how so?
There are two reasons for that. Number one, their defense created all of those turnovers. They pressured Goff to force those interceptions. And then Earl Thomas, the play he made, that kind of, you know, was a tone setter for the rest of the game.
You talk about the punch out of bounds on the Gurley, what would have been touchdown, where Gurley was running towards that pylon, and Thomas reached out, punched the ball, forced a fumble, and that ball then hit the pylon. Kind of a lucky bounce for the Seahawks.
Yes.
Ended up ruling being a fumble out of the back of the end zone for the Rams, so that it was a touchback for the Seahawks, essentially, and they got the ball, and they got to take over.
Yes,
so.
And that play, that's just hustle. That's who wants it more, and great teams are going to make those plays, and that's why the Seahawks were a great team and outshined the Rams on Sunday. And throughout the day, their defense was awesome. Sheldon Richardson got a pick, and they were just flying around. Frank Clark was absolutely amazing, and I think we're really seeing him come into his own with pass rushing, and he's going to have to take on a bigger role now because Cliff Avril, you know, I don't know if we're going to actually get him back, if ever. Jay Glazer reported on Sunday that his injury is actually career-threatening, possibly, as he was, you know, struggling to have feeling from his neck down to his arm, or something like that. The Hawks, in my opinion, did win the game on Sunday.
All right, Seth, I want you to answer the question. You need to pick a side. Did the Seahawks beat the Rams, or did the Rams beat the Rams?
I do think the Seahawks beat the Rams. If you watch the first half and then you watch the second half, you'd see two completely different offenses for the Rams. And the reason being, the Seahawks made some fantastic halftime adjustments defensively, and the Rams didn't score a single point that whole half. I mean, the turnovers, yes, a couple of those were really unforced on the Rams' part. The dropped punt by Tavon Austin, the Seahawks can't really take credit for creating that turnover, but when there's five turnovers, at least a couple of those you have to give credit to the Seattle defense for forcing.
Mm-hmm. That's fair. I'm going to go the other way, maybe just to be that guy, maybe because I actually believe it. I think the Rams beat the Rams, especially because you mentioned the five turnovers. I'll give you, okay, a couple, like the Earl Thomas play. All hustle, made it happen, punched the ball out, and then kind of got a lucky bounce that it hit the pylon. If it doesn't hit the pylon, you know, Rams take over at the one. They keep the ball right there at the goal line and can go ahead and score. The fact that it was a one-score game and the Rams dropped a potential game-winning touchdown in the end zone on one of the last plays, that's all you need to know.
Mm-hmm. I mean, Cooper Kupp, you know, great wide receiver, but he was getting beat up all day, and he was getting hit all day by those Seahawks defensive backs, and that had a big reason to do with why Cooper Kupp wasn't able to make that catch. Because the physicality of the Seahawks defense, it wears on you. And, you know, just playing a football game in the NFL and playing against a defense like that, it wears on you, and eventually it's going to take its toll mentally and physically.
DJ, I got to cut you off real quick. 1 second. We got a caller. His name is Josh. He's from off campus, all the way from Minnesota, actually.
Oh,
Josh, you want to answer the question for us. Tell us, did the Seahawks beat the Rams, or did the Rams beat the Rams?
Well, being out here, I'm not able to really watch the Seahawks play, but from looking at the highlights, I think the Rams beat the Rams. Like that one fumble that Gurley had into the end zone, that should have been a touchdown probably.
Right.
And that one pass on 3rd and 10 that they had with like 12 seconds to go, that should have been caught by that wide receiver. So, I mean, the Seahawks did good, put themselves in a position to win, but really it was the Rams who beat the Rams.
Excellent, excellent. Josh, want to thank you for your call. Thanks for tuning in, man. Hope you listen to us next week, Wednesday morning at 9 a.m., man. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Yeah, of course. Anytime.
All right.
Well.
So if you want to be like Josh and call us.
2v2.
Call us and tell us, you know, did the Seahawks beat the Rams or the Rams beat the Rams? You can do it 253-535-7332. Once again, 253-535-7332.
Let's move over to the offensive side. What did you guys think of the offensive performance from Wilson, the offensive line, and just everybody in general?
I was just going to point out how awful I think Eddie Lacy is. I have a number of Packer friends who are laughing at me when the Seahawks signed Eddie Lacy because of how bad he is. And now having seen him for 5 games, I'd have to agree. He gets hit, and he does not do what Marshawn Lynch would be able to do. He just falls over.
I think when you're trying to compare anybody to Marshawn Lynch, that's tough because he's a future Hall of Famer. He is, you know, a once-in-a-lifetime player with how just beastly, I guess, is the word he is. And part of the reason I think Eddie Lacy isn't doing too hot is because, you know, because of that offensive line. Yes, I know it is an easy out, Christian, but It's true. Everything starts up front, and when you don't have gaps and holes to run through, you're not going to be able to create as much, especially Eddie Lacy is not good enough to create on his own like Marshawn was. And so I think that's one point that we can attribute to his struggles.
Also comparing, you know, a towards the end of his career Eddie Lacy to a Marshawn Lynch in his prime is also maybe mightily unfair.
Eddie Lacy's not that old.
He's probably at the end of his run, though.
Yeah, that is true.
He's running back in the NFL. It's like 4 years max for most of those guys, right?
Yeah. Well, so, yeah, most of those guys, not Marshawn.
I mean, well, be curious to look up and see what he's doing down in Oakland. I would venture to say not very much.
Yeah, yeah. But he had his stint here in Seattle was amazing. And the way he lit the crowd up at CenturyLink and just, you know, he was the heart and soul of that whole team, pretty much, with the way he ran and just, like, the funness he carried himself with. I don't even know if that's a word, but it's a great way to describe him. Yeah, it is now.
So going back to the Seahawks and the Ram game, we want to talk about the offense a little bit. I don't think Russell Wilson was very good at all.
I was
24 for 37, 198 yards, a touchdown. Didn't he throw an interception as well?
Yeah, he threw a pick, and that pick, you know, that ball should have never been thrown. That's totally on Russell. I would say he wasn't stellar. But he did what he needed to do and improvise with the way he needed to, you know, get the Hawks over the hump and get them into field goal position.
He did what he needed to do to beat a team that turned the ball over five times and had a chance to win in one of the last plays.
Yeah. Yeah.
Who beat who? The Rams beat the Rams? Come on, dude.
The Seahawks did just enough to win, man.
Come on, dude. Okay. They did just enough to barely win the game.
You want to know one thing? I want to point out one thing that I did think was a positive point for the offense was their involvement with Jimmy Graham. I saw something that I rarely see up in Seattle, and that was they threw a fade to Jimmy Graham on an ISO route against a smaller corner and scored a touchdown. Props to Daryl Bevel, because this needs to become more and more a thing that they do down in the red zone, because like I've said before and I'll say it again, Jimmy Graham is a freak of nature at 6'7", 270, and a player that needs to be involved.
Seth, you mentioned Eddie Lacy. Any other person on the offense that caught your attention negatively or positively?
Well, I'm going to give a compliment to one group in particular, and this is the greatest compliment that I can give to this group. That would be the Seattle O-line. They were average. They were not completely terrible. And the fact that I can say that about Seattle's offensive line is pretty impressive. They did all right against that great Rams defensive line.
And one interesting thing to look ahead to is Jokel just had a scope surgery on his knee. He's probably going to miss the Giants game, they said. They just worked out Brandon Albert yesterday, but unfortunately, you know, no deal is going to be done. He left without a deal down there. So, you know, I'm wondering what they're going to do. Maybe Glowinski moves into that left guard position while Jokel is gone, because Abuji, is that his name?
I think so.
Abuji has kind of taken over his right guard position. I think he's played pretty well to this point. And I know Glowinski can't play tackle, so they're not going to move Odhiambo into left guard. So it'll be interesting to see what they do with that going forward.
All I do know, the bye week is this week, and then the schedule gets pretty easy, pretty light for the Seahawks moving forward. You mentioned the Giants game. I mean, they don't have a lot of tough opponents coming up until later in the year. So the bye week comes at a good time for them. They can kind of readjust, reevaluate, and fix what they need to fix, because I'm not convinced. I'm not sold on the offense. Like I said, you know, they did just enough to beat the Rams down in LA. I mean, they definitely have things to fix, and now they're on their bye week. So we're going to jump into a break right now. Talk a little bit about the University of Washington, and all of a sudden, it's Chris Peterson versus ESPN. We'll talk about that on the other side of the break, so don't go anywhere. This is Half Athlete Radio on Loot Air Student Radio.
Welcome to my block party. Glad you can make it.
The only triple doubles you get come with fries.
Last time you blocked someone, you were online.
I can do this all day. Your moves are just gay.
Using gay to mean dumb or stupid, not cool.
Not cool.
Not in my house, not anywhere.
It's not creative.
It's offensive to gay people.
And you're better than that.
here.
Let's get a chance. We remember last week that Chris Peterson really kind of spouted his opinion for like the first time in his tenure as the Washington head coach, kind of saying that the late games are hindering him. And then on Saturday on College Game Day, this was Kirk Herbstreit's opinion.
Is as an advocate on this show for the Pac-12 for the last 20 years, wanting to try to bring as much exposure to that conference as we can, you should be thanking ESPN for actually having a relationship, thanks to Larry Scott, with the Pac-12, because now your games are seen.
DJ, what do you make of the idea that UW should be thankful that their games are even on TV?
You know, it wasn't just Herbstreit. It was even the commentators that were commentating the game. And ESPN, in my opinion, was super petty for this. They've always had the reputation of being an ACC and SEC dominant college football, you know, coverage. And it just showed even more with the way they broadcast it. There were stats. They're running stats even during the game that after 9 p.m. Eastern, they have an average of 38% higher viewership. Okay, that's true, but why do you have to run that? You can
that's what it essentially turned into is, like I said before the break, it turned into Chris Peterson versus ESPN.
Yes.
Butthurt isn't a politically correct term, but that's what they were when it came to his comments about.
No, yeah, totally.
I mean, they were upset that he was mad that they had to play late games. But I mean, I see both sides. I almost lean towards Kirk Herbstreit in this situation because, yes, I mean, who would be seeing the Huskies if they were playing at one? Seth, mm-hmm. I think you mentioned Alabama playing bad schools all the time and their games always being on TV, right?
Definitely.
Well, you know, they're gonna get to be on TV regardless.
Because they're an SEC team.
So, you know, maybe those late starts and the little exposure that they do get, they should be happy with. Because if they played at the same time at Alabama, they wouldn't be on TV. And they haven't had a game that needed to be a primetime 1 p.m. or 5 p.m. start time.
I would argue that
they play garbage.
The Colorado game could be...
What was the final score? That was like 46-7.
I know, but it's a rematch of the Pac-12 championship from last year, and it had the chance, like all of Alabama's games, it had the chance to be a good game to where maybe Colorado pulls it out, but, you know, that wasn't on primetime. And even going forward, like the Stanford game, which was supposed to be, you know, the Pac-12 title game, that's on a Friday night at a 7:45 p.m. start. Peterson, you know, he never said he didn't like the late games, but just... constantly playing them is ridiculous.
That's him saying he doesn't like them, though. You tell us, if you're listening, call us, 253-535-7332. Who do you side with? Do you side with Chris Peterson thinking that it's unfair that the University of Washington, and it's hurting their program, that they have to play at these 7:45, 8 p.m. start times? Or do you side with Herbstreit that they should be thankful that their games are even on TV at all? Because it's a toss-up, and right now I'm leaning towards, you know, Herbstreit and saying, yeah, they should be happy that their games are on. DJ, you're obviously not. You're mad that they're playing in the late situation. Seth, what do you say?
They're, what, number five in the rankings now?
Yes, currently
right,
number AP.
Five. How are you not going to televise those games? Like, ESPN cannot be serious that...
But they have.
You
they're on TV.
USC always gets 1 o'clock, 3 o'clock, you know, even noon start times. And, you know, Stanford gets more of the same sometimes, too. And I know even David Shaw took a disliking to their kickoff time this past weekend against Utah. He said, please call somebody on the East Coast, tell them what happened in the second half. I guarantee they missed it. So, I mean, it's not just Chris Peterson who is fed up with these late start times. It's David Shaw, the coach from Stanford, USC and Stanford were the favorites to win the Pac-12 this year and meet in the championship. Washington and Washington State are always forgotten when ESPN talks about
the only two undefeateds.
Yeah, they're always forgotten when ESPN talks about the Pac-12. And even now, I mean, I watch a lot of college football coverage. There is not much talk about Washington or Washington State as being a contender or as making a push for that playoff.
I'll argue that they haven't done anything to talk about. They've beaten teams they should have beat 46-7.
Yeah.
There's nothing to talk about when a team is just smacking teams that they should.
But they still don't even bring it up that it would be an interesting matchup if they were to play a Georgia, a Penn State, a Alabama, or even an Oklahoma who was, oh my goodness.
Why would you go out of your way to talk about something like that when they're like 160 teams that they have to cover? They have to pick, oh, this was the best game. We're going to talk about this game. It's not, I mean, to go out of your way to be like, oh, wouldn't it be cool if the Huskies played the, so I like, come on. There's no reason to talk about that yet.
Yeah. But even like, for example, they were talking about Wake Forest and the Florida State game when they played a couple weeks ago. More than they were, because that was the week of the Washington-Colorado game, and they were talking about that, which was Florida State. I hear more about Florida State right now than I do about Washington, and Florida State is 1-3 currently. Like, that, again, they're an ACC team, which ESPN loves to cover the ACC and the SEC, because people forget about the West Coast and all the good teams that are out here. It's the same thing in Division III. Most of the teams are out east, and there's only two conferences out here in the West.
Shifting gears just a little bit. Yeah, good news for the Huskies is that number 3 Oklahoma lost to a very, very bad Iowa State team. That's going to significantly impact their chances for the college football playoffs.
Speaking of that, Oklahoma was a 38-point favorite. You want to know where that game was started and where it was broadcasted? It started at 9 o'clock, so 12 o'clock Eastern time, on Fox Sports. That is a prime time game right there, that Oklahoma was favored by 38, and they lost. They lost 38-31.
I would almost argue that these late starts are more prime time than 1 p.m. on a Saturday. I got things to do.
Who stays up till midnight watching football on
Saturday? Granted, I get to watch the games because all of our games are at 1, but, you know... a lot of those voters, viewers, oh man, that Washington team is pretty good, but they can't say that because the games start at 10:45 Eastern time and go to like 1 o'clock Eastern time. People got church to go to on Sunday morning. They got family gatherings to go to on Sunday, probably early. So they're not watching those games.
I don't know, dude. I'm going to lean towards Kirk Herbstreit and be like, yeah, I'm thankful my game is even on TV. Because I would be more people are seeing it because the game is actually aired than who aren't seeing it because it's not.
Mm-hmm.
That's the bottom line.
That, I mean,
Pac-12 has their own network. He talked about the relationship that they have with the president of the Pac-12 or whatever his position is.
He even came out and said he didn't agree with Chris Peterson's comments. So
right. Be happy you're on TV. Too. Don't be mad that you are, but not in a good time. Be happy you are on TV. That's the end of the discussion, I think. I mean, it has to be anyway, because we're out of time.
Yeah, we could go on and on about this.
We can do it off air, but for those of you who are listening at home, we got to go. Be sure to tune in to HNC Sports on Friday morning. Haina Alou and Carson Barnett, if you like football, they will definitely get you ready for the weekend's activities. They talk a ton of football, so tune in and check that out. Also, on Friday at 2 p.m., tune in for What's the Big Deal? Dylan Foreman, Sarah Cornell Meyer, and Zach Goff working through their show every week. They cover a little bit of everything and a lot of bit of everything, so you should definitely tune in and check that out. But for Seth Bershing and DJ Winter, my name is Christian Bond. We are out of here. See ya.